So I ask you all now, please, to give a very warm welcome to Andrew Waters.
Well, Mr. President, officers of the Association, ladies and gentlemen, and young ones, I notice, are all sitting together on the table over there. I'm delighted that they've been contained that way. You have won where I fail. It's lovely to have Andrew Robson back today. He was my first head boy in 1977 and saw me through probably the first of my trickiest 21 years headmastering, but the fact that I survived that length of time, Andrew, I give great credit to you, so thank you, and lovely to see you. I did ask Guy Holland, when he was yet a boy at St. Michael's, to go and take on some coaching from Graham Gooch, and this was not actually in cricket, it was in hair restore. Sorry, Ian, I had to get that one. I will remember the first time I had the privilege of addressing the reunion dinner of the St. Michael's College Society, which was held then in London at either the Basel Street or Basel Hotel. But Brian will actually tell me, because I know, I always like to just give you that leeway, Brian.
It was the Basel, as far as I remember.
It was. Yes, it was. And you and I drove up that day. We went to the dinner. And we were sufficiently sober to drive all the way back again afterwards. And I wouldn't dare do that now. Well, I can see that. Despite Nora's support of you. It was interesting that that particular passage was read by next year's president, because I had that in front of me, and I read it before I put together some of my memories of tonight. And so my first paragraph starts, I remember too, vividly driving to St. Michael's in April 1977 from Brecon with my late wife Sally for my first interview, and being grilled by one governor as to whether I had a reasonable life expectancy. I think I'd probably actually answer that question, since 29 years later, I'm just about still around, after two further headships, two heart attacks and a bypass, and only one of the governors at that time is still with us. I remember driving down the Rattlebank on that fresh spring day beneath a cloudless sky, seeing the rooftops of St. Michael's peering above the newly leafed trees, and being almost overcome with uncontrollable excitement that this is where my immediate destiny might be. It was magical. And as we drove through the gates and saw the east end of the college with its magnificent imposing facade, I felt a little like Alice, or later as if I was entering Narnia. There were lots of strange creatures around, and those were the other interviewees. I remember, too, my first confrontation, there have been many since, with a rather angry parent on the very first day of my first term in September 1977. I wished to speak to the headmaster, and my immediate response, having only just arrived in the job that day, was to look over to my shoulder. See where he might be, and then with dread realized that I was he. I suggested we might go into the study, and there he launched into me verbally. What right had I had to have his son in the school? And quite frankly, I hadn't got a clue. I didn't even know his son. I was speechless. And it transpired that his lovely wife had entered her two adorable youngsters without telling her husband. He he had got wind of it that day and had come hot foot to see me to get things sorted out. If you've ever been into the study, I viewed that window, I looked at its size, and I realised the size was insufficient for a hasty exit, and turned to the only other part of my armoury, which was smooth diplomacy, in the hope that in due course, when the temperature had reduced, some form of reasoning might be forthcoming. It was, and a year or so later, the eldest boy was joined by his younger brother. They were small then, were Lawrence and Robin. Sorry, I did ask your permission. Admittedly, I didn't say in what context. Confrontations aren't always so easily resolved. Three men were sitting together bragging about how they had given their new wives duties. Terry had married a woman from America and had bragged that he told his wife that she was going to do all the dishes and house cleaning that needed doing in their house. He said it took a couple of days, but on the third day he came home to a clean house and the dishes were all washed and put away. Jimmy had married a woman from Australia. He bragged that he'd given his wife orders that she was to do all the cleaning, dishes and cooking. He told them that the first day he didn't see any results, but the next day it was better. By the third day his house was clean, the dishes were done, and he had a huge dinner on the table. The third man had married a Canadian girl. He boasted that he told her that her duties were to keep the house cleaned, dishes washed, lawn mown, laundry washed, and hot meals on the table for every meal. He said the first day he didn't see anything. The second day he didn't see anything. But by the third day, most of the swelling had gone down. He could see a little out of his left eye, enough to fix himself a bite, blow the dishwasher, and pull the landscape. I remember that first commemoration, not just the installation with all its pomp and ceremony, but the extraordinary and singular energy generated into 2 days of drama, of music, of worship, of liturgy, of socialising, of meetings, feastings and pure theatre. And the idea that there was something such as normality also to be retained for the girls and boys all at the same time. Which reminds me of the story of George Hill, headmaster of St. George's, Windsor. When asked who ran the school when he was away, he simply replied, "The very same person who runs it when I'm here." I remember the autumnal smell of the grounds, the grass, the leaves and the flowers. Then beyond their best, which had been planted earlier that summer, in the time of Dennis and Jenny, and now being enjoyed by Sally and me. Planted tenderly by Derek Landman, somewhat younger than the 70 years which he has celebrated this year. Being thrilled in my first weeks at my constant confusion over their names. The archaic bathroom area, until it was personally reconstructed by Harry Downes, as he did later with the games room and the roof of the Alderson building. I wonder if any one single fellow recognised the thousands of pounds over the years that the Major saved, and yet those who needlessly criticised him if ever there was a figure wrong in their paycheck or the college accounts. There was a tremendous goodwill and generosity of countless individuals who assisted the wheels by so very many acts of generosity, too many to mention all by name, to enhance the quality of life and to provide comforts to the youngsters. The carpeting of Big Dorm was a gift, the sponsoring of the record torches. the provision of a new central heating boiler for the main building, which arrived in the twilight year, about 11:55 p.m. I reckon, at the college. Nevertheless, it was did prove that it was possible to have a warm building. And blanketing all the numerous activities, the music, both choral and instrumental, it weaved itself into the very nature of our existence. That is, those who are privileged enough to be at our business as student or adult. It was a family, and as with all good families, we rejoiced with all that was good, and acclaimed the success of others in whatever discipline, in the same way that there was that level of support when the downside occurred, as so often it can in life. The daily act of evensong for both staff, choristers and commoners was a fitting and timely space in which to reflect upon the day and to be raised through the music to something that was a luxury, and indeed becomes more so when it's not there on tap. And to have spent a predominant length of my life at Lichfield, St. Michael's and Exeter, indeed over half of my life, with the availability of really uplifting music at that standard in worship, is now something I miss very much. I remember the almost film-set atmosphere around the grounds with twinkling lights peering through the foggy evenings and the tramp of little people passing between the Alderson building, that extra pupil's common room, and the main buildings for bedtime. Health and safety, and Philip Wilson wouldn't allow that now. Fluorescent lights every 5 yards, in case one misses one step, would be the order of today. Or the medieval banquet, again, would come under the hammer for health and safety, bringing together the young and more mature in jovial party mood on the cloister lawn. Indeed, the Bishop of Hereford, dressed in his purple cassock, and people thought that was part of the costume. And that was the parents, not the children. Carving the roast at the high table and telling me he could quite easily get used to that way of life. And I remember the carol concert trip to the Netherlands and the audiences literally queuing up well in advance of the time published. The various recitals in all weathers that Roger Judd and the boys undertook. Expo 84 and the wonderful support of parents over several days. Richard Pepper milking his plastered limb, and I have a photograph of it here, so that he could have another tete-a-tete with the Queen and all the ensuing correspondence. And I remember the January of 1981, Brian will soon prompt me if I've got the wrong year, when the start of year had to be delayed day after day. David Brooks, having just flown in from Hong Kong to an alien environment, coming into the sitting room and saying to Sally, "Do you normally have water coming through the ceiling in the toilet?" My race took place up to the next floor to see water cascading down from above, and then going up into those old urinals in Big Dorm, which is about 2 inches in water, clean, and realising... that was just in case anybody ever... and realising that the flushing system was still just functioning, but the drains had all frozen. The almost like Siberian winter for that short spell. And Professor Ivor Keyes, one of the fellows, having been sent by Sally to get logs after 2 hours of digging away the snow, was just reaching the store. Another was that remarkable day when the whole area from the front door to the grass was sheer ice. What memories. I remember, don't I just. The events leading up to and the post-announcement period following the closure of the college. I've often been asked which school I enjoyed most in running. There is a very simple answer. No schools were ever the same. How could one compare the beauty, the objectives, the vision, the grandeur and the peculiar identity of Tenbury with a 1960s purpose-built glass and plywood structure, as was to be found in my next school in Sutton, with 280 boys who initially had no opportunity of the hugely personality shaping of the musical tradition. Or to compare St. Michael's and Sutton and Lichfield in the same breath was like trying to say goose, beef or mutton, and I won't say which Lichfield was, because the senior lay clerk is sitting on my right. No, all were very different, but as a schoolmaster, they had one ingredient in common, and that was the vivacity, the excitement, the yearning for knowledge, and the exploration of mind and physical strengths, and the weaknesses that went with them in the adventure of childhood. That wonderful freshness of intention, the humour and laughter and the tears, the fantastic ability to make judgments, far, far more erudite in the under-13s than in the over-13s. But I can merely thank all of you present and our absent friends of pupils, parents, staff and friends of St. Michael's College, embodied in the St. Michael's College Society, for all that you gave us and continue to give to others. I pray it will go on in the foreseeable future, whereby you protect and preserve, not as an antiquity, but as a living mission, the ideals in which we all, thank God, were given the opportunity to play a part. Thank you.